When evildoers came upon me to devour my flesh, my adversaries, my enemies, they stumbled and fell. Though a host encamp against me, my heart will not fear. Though war rise against me, in spite of this, I shall be confident. Well, there you go. Ukrainians, read that, and you'll be all okay. Maybe their soul will. Would yours? Would mine? One thing I have asked from the Lord that I shall seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, to meditate in his temple. For in the day of trouble he will conceal me in his tabernacle. In the secret place of his tent he will hide me. He will lift me up on a rock. And now my head will be lifted up above my enemies around me, and I will offer in his tent sacrifices with shouts of joy. I will sing, yes, I will sing praises to the Lord. Let's just stop there. The heart that desires to dwell around the tabernacle, remember? That it wasn't, we're not worshiping a building here, but for them, they were told to construct this place so that he could be with them. He would come near them. The tabernacle said, I will come, but you honor me. You come my way. He goes, I just want to come there to behold your beauty. Beauty. Not something pleasing to the eye, but there's something there that's it's satisfying. It's awe-inspiring to meditate in his temple. Why specifically we're talking here about his deliverance here? Now we got to think about that as his deliverance. Well, then why is he always crying about, I lost my friends, my the people I trusted are against me, you know, I'm running for my life. Okay, what kind of deliverance is that? But here, he's so confident in being protected by God that he is looking to sing praises to God. Lord, help us to meditate on these things. Lord, help us. There's so much a disenchantment, meaning, okay, so what am I supposed to feel? What am I supposed to think? What am I supposed to do? I did all that. Nothing happened. Father, whatever we're doing, you are sustaining, you are moving things, there's life, and it is life with purpose. Would you help us? Perhaps we've taken control of our own life, thinking we have our own choices, and it's my life, and we're so suspicious of somebody telling us what to do, and thinking they're all selfish, and Father, would you help us? Help us first to see ourselves. That in our own independence, that we're not as nice as we think we are. That we're not able to back up our words like we even say, and somehow we don't think we're liars. But Father, your word is trustworthy. As we sit here and pull verses out, how many thousands of years ago? And we say that you were trustworthy, and these people trusted you, and we are called to trust in the same way they did. So, Father, would you help us? Help us not to think that somehow some movie we watch is real. No, that's something we created. Father, you are the living God, the God who is near, as we've been looking in Timothy. And so, Father, would you help us today as we come to worship? We're weak, you are mighty. Would you help us with those habits of grace to be in your word? And would you help us, Lord? We sit there and we think of every reason in the book why we don't have to memorize, because we don't want to fail, and we don't want to be told what to do, and we don't want something messing with our schedule. But would you help us, Lord? We must be thinking the things that you have said, not the things we think you've said. Even the disciples thinking they were saving you. We're told that Peter was told he was Satan. John and James were told they had the wrong spirit when they were going to call down fire of judgment. They didn't get the timing, and they were close to you. You were present, and they didn't get it. Help us, Lord. Help us. And so help us to be careful now as we talk about what's going on in our hearts, in our church, in the church in the Western world here, and help us to look wider, not to be cynical, but to be more diligent in our own lives. And we come in Jesus' name. Amen. So, one more time, if you would look up the article here. I want to start right away with this article here. We are working on the assumption here, must focus on the roots, not merely the fruit. But here specifically, shifting our purpose, focus from personal maturity and growth to building healthy churches. That's what this article is talking about here. Shifting our focus from personal maturity and growth. You sitting here, if you're not careful, you're not growing on your own, you're sitting here deciding whether, this is worth my time. I always came to Sunday school. I don't know whether it's worth my time. I always came to the morning service. I don't know if it's worth my time. It's very self-centered here. No, healthy churches, something that's outside of you, something that at its origins is a construct from God. He set it up. He called it to be this way. So, I want to get right to this article here. I'm going to skip a few parts here, but you're looking this up on your phones to be able to follow me, how movements can undermine churches and hurt their own cause, all right? I'm jumping in the middle here so that we can get the end part of this article. People instinctively grimace at the thought of institutions because they constrain us. Second paragraph. They keep us from moving and growing in ways that feel neutral. But look a little closer. These constraints also facilitate, channel, and stimulate growth. A trimmed rose bush grows. Lines on the road help us reach our destination. Games are most enjoyable when people keep the rules. Mastering a language gives us power. In short, institutions allow for bounded innovation. They curtail the excessive, unwieldy growth that ultimately harms the cause. They curtail the excessive, unwieldy growth that ultimately harms the cause. We're not looking for growth. We're looking for God's growth. We're looking for growth together. If nobody's in your soul, nobody's talking inside, then all we're doing is noticing your outside, okay? If you're not letting somebody in your soul, you might have cancerous growth growing in there. Are you saved? You say, how dare you ask? You better be concerned, because we're not God. He is. When it's done, you either are or you aren't. But then saved people are going to show certain fruit in here. Institutions curtail the excessive, unwieldy growth that ultimately harms the cause. We're not talking about any church. We're not talking about any institution. We're talking about what God set up as he intended. They curtail excessive, unwieldy growth that ultimately harms the cause while creating exponential potential previously unimagined. Charles Spurgeon, with his useful foresight, anticipated what took political scientists another century to figure out as he meditated on the relationship of revivals and church membership in his sermon, The Great Revival. Spurgeon said, I must say once more that if God should send us a great revival of religion, it will be our duty not to relax the bonds of discipline. Some churches, when they increase very largely, are apt to take people into their number by wholesale without due and proper examination. We ought to be just as strict in the paroxysms of a revival as in the cooler times of a gradual increase. And if the Lord sends his spirit like a hurricane, it is ours to deal with skill with the sails, lest the hurricane should wreck us by driving us upon some fell rock that may do us serious injury. Take care, ye that are officers in the church, when ye see the people stirred up, that ye exercise still a holy caution, lest the church become lowered in its standard of piety by the admission of persons not truly saved. Spurgeon's wisdom bears worth repeating in our own day. The good desire for a God-given revival quickly morphs into man-manufactured revivalism as Christians get more excited about the ideas of movements than they do about the clunky old local church. One generation of pastors and missionaries will announce a massive number of conversions with fireworks, while a second generation will show up 10 years later, look around and ask, where did all those new converts go? Like peeking into an empty convention hall with nothing but folding chairs and trash left behind. Yet the temptation of revivalism is understandable. So often the work of the local church feels slow, unimpressive, even unproductive. Week after week, another sermon, the same songs, folks shuffling in and shuffling out. Meanwhile, evangelistic encounters feel like banging one's head on the wall. No one's interested in our good news. No one's buying. Baptisms happen, but not nearly as quickly as we trust our sovereign God is capable of giving. Then people talk of a movement, and our ears perk up. Who of us from the earliest days of our faith has not wanted to witness a revival or get swept up in a movement? To watch as a river of people rush toward Jesus, having just discovered his goodness and grace. The call to join the movement may involve self-sacrifice, but it holds up a shared vision and the hopes of explosive growth, which feels compelling after years of schlepping and knocking on closed doors. You remember nothing but that word from last week. To this end, the leaders of movements loosen the tight institutional strictures of a local church like unbuckling a belt. Now we can really run. I'll skip a paragraph. In his article, Six Marks of Revivalism, historian Andrew Balich lists inadequate ecclesiology, the study of the church, as one of the marks of revivalism. Not revival, revivalism. He observes that revivalism, by its very nature, looks beyond the ordinary means of grace and undervalues the power and centrality of local church ministry. 19th century version, he explains, open-air preaching and tent meetings replace the local church. Not surprisingly, revivalism's lack of emphasis on the local church was coupled with an ambivalence toward denominational forms. I don't care where they're all different. Look, they're coming to Jesus. This, in turn, set the stage for undenominational evangelists like Moody and Sankey on the one hand, while on the other hand, resulted in the promulgation of numerous denominations and radical sects that claim to be the harbingers of true religion. On one side, nothing matters, just come to Jesus. On the other side, everybody's wrong but us. All right? All kinds of different groups saying, this is what needs to change, and it's right. Okay. That's what we read last week, okay? Did you hear anything different this week? We said plenty here. You might have to copy that slide and paste it somewhere else. I'm not looking to stay on here, but I don't want to read that and waste it. I just didn't think we can go to the rest of the article without saying that again. Did you hear anything else? Don't look up there. You won't be able to read them all. And just what crossed your mind as you listened there? What's the danger listed, and what temptations lead to that danger? Is there anything you want to add? What'd you hear? Hope. Right. Remember I've told you, I believe in the 22 years that we've been here that we have sinned as a congregation by not putting certain people under church discipline. We've hurt the cause of Christ. We've hurt that person. We've hurt in here. But I said I would have no part as an elder in disciplining those people until I felt that we were starting to own our responsibility to these members while they were here. Blows me away how people get more attention when they leave the church than when they're in here, okay? All of a sudden, we let things go when people leave, and you want to play with them and be with them. They were here for 5 years. They were here for 10 years. And what did you do with their soul? I don't know, but once they leave, it's the forbidden fruit. And it's like, well, let's go play with them. You're being mean to them, all right? On the other side, church discipline, we found in the 23 years here, certain people did something, nail them to the wall. Other people did things, you're nasty if you touch them. You sin, I sin, let it go. What in the world? Do you care about the honor of God's name? Do you care about the integrity of the gospel? Do you realize your opinion is doing something with the honor of God's name and the integrity of the gospel? It must play out with individual people. So she's talking about the rose bush. I've been thinking about that. I don't know how to do roses. I thought my My wife likes roses. I think she grew up with them, but we never get time to taking care of them. So you know what happens? They're going all over the place, all right, into my shed. There's a window in my shed, and it grows in there. I don't know how you're supposed to prune them. I just know I'm sick and tired of mowing by them and getting stuck by the prickers. So clip them off. Clip them. Gone. All right? And then every few years, they die. So, well, now I know what to get for Mother's Day. Another rose. $30. $30. At least. And they go higher. But I don't know how to... I just know the first year, when the nursery had them, they have nice roses. After that... Something needs to happen to them. Because some people know how to keep those roses year after year. And there's beautiful flowers when they maintain them. If we're not careful, our saying, get your hands off my life. Just ask somebody recently. You've been wandering for years. How many people have even tried to get into your life? Person thought for a long time and said, one. One. Not here. It's long gone, all right? But dancing in and out of other churches, one person. And that one gave up pretty quickly. Okay. Will you let people in? Will you guide people into your soul? Yeah, the people I'll choose. No. The people God has placed in your life. They'll do it wrong. How in the world are you going to learn that God is your hiding place if you're always looking to yourself or for safe people? You read those Psalms. God is his hiding place in the place of, like we said, the closest ones to him being a harm. But that frees him then, like we've been saying on Wednesday night, to be able to get back into ministry. There's a danger of denying the necessary pruning and allowing certain unhealthy, the nicest way we can put it, whatever, aspects to flourish. What do you got? John? We got a couple going to college. Katya's leaving this week. Say goodbye to her for now and be praying for her. A couple more going the next week. So, you know, I remember crying like a baby when I said goodbye to my parents. On the other side, it was like I have my own room, my own bed, right? And what's the sign you're at college? You have to buy your own laundry bag, right? It's like, make sure you get your laundry bag. It's like, why? Why? I'm free. No, you better clean it. Whatever you're taking with, you better clean it. There's work associated with you being there. You're not there to have your own apartment. You're paying a lot for that bed. So you better do what you went there for. See? So, but what you're saying, when you've been in something for a long time, you think, if I was outside of this, look what more I could do. And then you find, oh my word, I got to take out the trash and I got to do this and I got to do that and I got to do that. What was I here for? I had to take out the trash at home. Right? So it's easy to think that somehow if I was outside, I'd be freer. You need to think about the correlation between people wondering if God is real, wondering, looking at restlessly for something to do with their lives, if that has to do with us thumbing our nose at the things that used to be normal among the people of God. You know that's what I'm saying with quotes when I say, who's going to vacuum the church? You're not spiritual by vacuuming, but the vacuumer says, needs to be done. This is us, we're here together, and you value the work that goes on in a church. Why do you fix the lights? Because I'm sitting there trying to focus and they keep flickering or they go off. That's not good. Doesn't bring God any honor. I can do that. I got it. It's not everything. We're here to do soul work. But then you realize soul work is inhibited when the roof is leaking all the time. You think that you got to put an umbrella up while you're talking to somebody. You think, so what are we doing in here? What do you think the movements are today? What, do you have a thought? Is that you? Go. Go ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Temptation. Yeah. 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 Yes. Right. Yeah. Thank you, any of you parents that helped your kids work on that summer project. I don't think they can get it. The younger ones, 7th and 8th grade, I don't think they're going to understand what I'm asking them to do. I just don't know what else to do. If you don't try at 7th and 8th grade, at 9th grade, they're not interested in it. 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade. I used to hope as working with youth, all right, whatever I am, I've been doing youth ministry for a million years. A long time. Youth guys, give up that. I don't believe in youth pastors. I believe them shepherding souls, and we're shepherding in a discipling way, and you end up working with the youth, but I'm working with you. We're working together with this. I can't get to the youth, but can't get to you. I can get with the youth, but then all of a sudden they feel the wedge between you and I, and what do? They don't choose you or I. They choose a third way. That's what you need to be more afraid of. Not, are they listening to John David? Are they listening? You want them to listen to a preacher. You want them to listen to other men and women in the church. You say, well, they're taking my authority. You're right, it makes it messy. That's the clunky part it talks about in here. On the other side, where do you want them to go? Towards you or towards God? You say, well, that means not you. You're not always godly. You're right. And that's what I'll tell them. I said, don't you dare choose me or your parents. If your parents care about God at all, they want you to fear God. Why are you asking that question? What do you want? What does it mean to fear God? Your parents, you'll fight with your parents, you'll fight with me, but both of us, even if we'll disagree with you, want you to fear God more than any of us, and His Word binds you. It directs you. It comforts you. Are you doing, when she talks about easy, there's no easy way to do that. So I don't know where they're. Thank you. If you had your kids, some of them, I could feel it. They didn't know what they were talking about. You tried. You thought, oh, man, how do I even begin to get this thought to my kid? It doesn't get easier. If they don't get it now, you try to get it to them when they're 23, 27, 43, 52. Do you know how much humility you have to eat when you go, I have no idea what he's talking about up there? You have to say, you know what, I have no idea, but I think it might be important. Let me listen long enough. Whoa! I think I caught a phrase. You ever try to learn a language, right? And you thought you were learning a lot, and then you hear somebody go, blah, 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 and you listen really quietly, and you go, I heard word, I heard door. He said door. Like, what else did he say? I have no idea, but he said door. Okay? You've got to get to the point where you say, I don't know whether this is from Mars or not, I do know I can't complain about not growing. I'm going my own way, doing my own thing, and I'm not even trying to understand. I tried. I tried. And did what? Humbled yourself and asked somebody else in here what they got? I talked to them. They didn't get anything either. Well, then what's his goal? I got it. You know, you're judging me, so I'll judge you. I can go right around the room and go, I think that one gets this much, that one gets this much, that one's getting nothing, 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 nothing. That one's getting this much, that. Okay, are we building personal growth or healthy churches? What happens? See, what's happened when the pastors were being trained in seminary, and then all of a sudden, I told in my frustration, I'd like to take every book in my house and burn it because it's irrelevant as far as my job as pastoring. Nobody cares about anything in those books. So you know what? They finally changed the way they're training pastors so that pastors don't need those things in those books. What were those books telling us to do? Those books were going all over the place in helping us learn the discipline of rightly dividing the word of truth. They were word-centered studies. Now we're all turning everybody into Dr. Phil. How to fix me? How to help me? How to enable me? How to help me be a better me? How to mobilize people to do things that they don't want to do? Instead of how to listen to God's word. Speak, Lord, for your servant hears. Anything else? Jim, what are you thinking? No, say what you want. Good, say what you want. Right. No, that's not undermining layman at all. He's saying, see, you're going clunky, you're shuffling in and out, all right? I'm here, what do you want? Are you going to judge me? Are you going to say something bad about me today? All of a sudden, phew, there's life somewhere. Everybody gets, do you remember the first time you saw an escalator? You remember the first time? Was it a good experience or did you trip and fall? Right? There you go. But, you know, I remember how many times in the mall when I finally got in the mall as a little kid, you know, I go up and down and up and down. And then what you do to annoy your parents is you go up the down. Right? Okay. But that what's so cool about an escalator? You didn't care about where you were going. You cared about how you got there. Right? That it was moving you all by itself. No, you pick up your legs. See, that, back to what Sandy was saying with that. See, that's the reason we go yes or no to preachers. You're making them do all the work. And if it ain't working for you, hey, just pick another. Pick another. You need to view it more like a hospital or a prison. You're in a prison, you don't get to choose your guard. You can like a certain guard, but it doesn't matter. The hospital, the same thing. You can't change your nurse. You like a certain nurse or not, you're there. You're sick. You need something. Prison. You don't like the thought of prison, but that's what we're thinking of institutions. They're claustrophobic. That's why people are breaking free of marriage. They're breaking free of everything for the sake. Wait. You heard. The rose bush grows. It keeps from unwieldy growth. Yeah, but not this one and this one. Good. Talk about the horror stories. Strip it back, and what are we? You get back to the Garden of Eden. Oh, there's two naked people. Why are they naked? Because there's no guilt, there's no shame. And what does that mean? Why is there no guilt or shame? Because there's nobody taking. You know what taking is? You deciding, I want that. I want that. You take that away. Well, in order to take that away, you're going to have to listen to somebody else say, I want that. This is good for you. All right, where was it? It was somebody. Oh, Harold. No, follow a tangent. Yes, sir. Yes. Right. That helps her feel rested.
What? No.
Keep going.
What she does.
Yes, sir.
Rather than what she's learning in her devotion. Her devotion is feeding anything.
Yes, sir.
But the learning is not, it's not nearly as important as the process. So coming back to the pruning or working with people who show up in the church, you know, and
go ahead. Yes, sir.
You can diet and know all kinds of that stuff. You can understand exactly what the context was, everything. But the working through of things with people, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm really not much of a people person.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I hate conflict. I hate it. I just wish, when I fantasize about things, you know, I study my backyard and I just imagine sitting back there and reading one of these books that I try to get you to read. Imagine having people over for burgers or whatever and they're being just, I enjoyed it and went to your house for burgers and played whatever game and just sang Kumbaya and hate it. You say, well, why do I say that? Because you say, well, John, you create conflict wherever you go. I can't stomach, well, two things. I've seen what happens when you pretend conflict's not there. I see what happens when you try on the surface. People, part of the reason people don't deal with people is because everybody tried to fix it. Are you mad at me? Are you mad at me? You mad? No, it's good. It's all good between you and me. It's good? Yeah, it's good. Good. I don't think it's good. They said it was good, but it's not good. They won't tell me. And you get tired. It's so much work to help make people pretend it's good and for them to make you pretend it's good. Everybody gets tired of the pretending. So I hate that. Number two, I cannot hold Jesus' hand and say everything's okay with you and me when I look up at him and he goes, it ain't okay. Whether it's me or whether it's you, doesn't matter. I look up at him and he goes, you got to deal with that. I go, I don't want to deal with that. They go, well, you got to change your own heart. I go, I don't want to change my own heart. Well, then I got to let go of his hand. Where's he going with that? So, you know, that you need to be in the Word. You're not. You need to meditate. You're not. You go, you don't know. You're not as much as you should be. You can pray all night like Jesus did. I'm not telling you to do that every night. I'm telling you to do it. If you did what Jesus did in a day and you healed all these people and he's preached all this stuff, and then it says he spent the whole night in prayer to God, you think, when do you sleep, guy? There was other times he said, come away and rest a while. But meaning, I'm not in the mood to pray. You think the disciples couldn't pray for 1 hour? Right? Do you stay awake every Wednesday night? Are you involved in everybody's prayer? When you're done judging them and saying they prayed it wrong, then what did you do? Okay? You know, did you get up and blow your nose? Did you go to the bathroom every week? Then what did you do? They sat under a tree in the Mount of Olives, right? And I fell asleep. And he prays the whole night. Why? Back to what she said. She said she was tired. But I need to do this. All right. Communion with God, though, gives what's necessary to say, I got to get up and do this. Night is coming when no man can work. Not talking about workaholic, but hey, you're a hobbyaholic. You're a restaholic. You're a comfortaholic. You're a workaholic. Now, you, this one thing I do, forgetting what lies behind, I press on. When you sleep, when you play, whatever you're doing, are you thinking about kingdom work? That's what's coming up on 1 Timothy on Wednesday night, as we're going to apply this one God, one mediator. We're going to apply this. So that's what he says. Well, whatever about the reading? I'll say, well, you need to do the reading, but it can't sit there. Otherwise, you're sitting here. That's what makes you judgmental. You sit here with this collection of all your things about God. You figure out where other people are out of line, but you're not dealing with them. When you're not dealing with them, you're not getting your rose bush pruned. You guys prune my rose bush. You know, the easiest way to get somebody to speak to your soul is try to meddle in their life. If you meddle in somebody else's life, they're glad to tell you what's wrong in yours. Okay? I'm saying that with quotes. It's hard work. It's hard work. That's why we're not people people. It takes a lot, and we feel very awkward. We are going to have to willing to be awkward, fail, and have conflict if you're going to love souls. If you don't do that, then why does God deal with you? All right? There's benefit necessity to work through the issues if fellowship with God. With God. He's right. The New Testament books always tell you, be kind, forgive one another. That's talking to the adults. And it's talking to adults that are together. If you have no reason to forgive anybody, it means you're not close enough with them. And usually the things you need to forgive are so superficial. Anything else? Where was it? Okay. All right. So let's go on here. There you go. All right. I need my article back. So what's his solution? He says, the point here is not to condemn all movements. All right? Movements. See, I don't even know what we would call a movement. They had the seeker-sensitive movement. That was in the 80s. Seeker-sensitive meant we're going to find all the people that have left church, find out why they've left church, and make a church that they'll be comfortable in. Okay, but that was in the 80s. Where were you in the 80s? All right, the 90s. 80s, 90s, all right? Came about then, all right? The seeker-sensitive movement, all right? You had the worship wars. Okay, they've been going on since the 80s again, all right? Late 70s, 80s. The worship wars, all right? Can we decide that contemporary isn't always contemporary anymore? We have a contemporary service. What does that mean? You jam for the lamb, right? Bang on the drums a little bit. Good. Yay for us. We're contemporary. Now what? Threw out the pipe organ. Garbage can. All right? All right. What are the other movements? The small group movement. All right. Good. Been there, done that. Remember I told you, whatever small groups are, they have their benefits. They have their liabilities. It's not a silver bullet. I told you, I saw the title of a book called Beyond Small Groups. Been there, done that, all right? So what are the other movements? It used to be that, hey, there's a revival coming to town. That was Billy Graham. He's dead. Franklin Graham does a little bit with that, but he's more known for Samaritan's Purse, right? Promise Keepers had a movement. That was in the 90s, right? Well, get all the men there, hug each other, go back and say you love your pastor, all right? Oh, that's dead. What other movements? So where are the movements? Jim? What? The COVID that led to virtual. Everybody was so proud of, well, our church just set up online services right before COVID, so we just skated right through it. Afterwards, they go, every church knew how to do online services. Right? I tell you, the debate has been, have we harmed our people by continuing those online services? All right? It's not just our church. We made a conscious decision. All right? I can say it in here. All right? Tony and Tammy would have benefited from those services continuing. They would have watched it. They needed it. All right? But I watched the rest of us, and I thought, for the healthy church, we needed to care for Tony and Tammy outside of those services. And they would be there, audio, on Monday if they wanted to listen. Could you get them to listen to them on Monday? That's a personal touch. They weren't being deprived of the services. They were deprived of seeing an online picture of Pastor John. We can give them a digital picture of Pastor John and let them listen to the audio, right? Okay, but the point is, we decided all of a sudden people are going, I have a headache, I'll stay home tonight. I'm ticked at people in the church. I'll watch it online. And it became a lot easier to go, don't tell me I wasn't in church. I watched it. There you go. You're judgmental again. I'm hearing it all over. I went through a church. A couple of times I've seen this. Beautiful cameras and everything. Go, we set it up, but I think it's destroying us. So there's a movement to online churches, virtual churches. I told you, I'm starting to see we have an online pastor now. You know, pastor music, pastor children, pastor this. We have an online pastor. So their whole job is to go find all those. I'm seeing in the bulletin. We have the numbers for our services. All right? The service of a larger church, right? 800 Sunday morning, 367 Sunday night, 150 on Wednesday night, 1,500 online views. Where's the focus in that church? Sounds like Sunday morning and online. There it is. What's happening in those services? And who's caring for those 1,500 views? I know it doesn't mean 1,500 people, but fine. 800 people came back in and out and watched a little bit of the service. What's happening to them? Unbuckling our belt. Done? Here we go. The point here is not to condemn all movements. See, I would argue more of the movements are outside the church now. It used to be revival meetings. I think it's more politics, finances, how to help, whatever your needs in your family that you're struggling with, you want to find somebody that relates to those. All right? Goal is not to get rid of politics, not finances. Not to get rid of those needs. We're talking about a clunky kingdom building thing. Somebody just told me this week, we ought to spend more time looking at how Jesus interacted with the 12 disciples. They were not the people that you should have chosen to be able to pass on the gospel when Jesus leaves in 3 years. My freshman year at school, we studied the training of the 12 by A.B. Bruce. It's downstairs, I think, if somebody didn't take it out. Grab it. Fat, old. You want a smaller one? I'll give you a smaller one. But that, I cried. I cried through that class. As all of a sudden, I grow up hearing sermons, grow up hearing verses, grow up in the church, didn't fight it. I go down there, and it's just ripping my heart open as you looked at how Jesus worked with those 12 and what he did with these people that shouldn't have been together and shouldn't have been able to do what the Lord used them to do. Careful. Think about what excites you. The point here is not to condemn all movements. When God hears the prayers of his people and decides to give an unusual quantity of conversions and gospel obedience, we should rejoice. Yet movements need all the biblically assigned constraints of local churches. What is the theological moorings of your political involvement? What is the theological moorings of your homeschool co-op? What are the theological moorings? Meaning, homeschool co-ops have been dangerous because they're not tied to the pastors and elders and churches that all these co-ops attend. Do you feel the pastors, elders, and churches at those co-ops? Not many of us are involved in them, but some of us are. But I've watched this for years. And all of a sudden, it's its own church. Who's holding it? Where's church discipline taking place in there? It shouldn't. It should be taking place in the churches of which these people are members. Usually, in these the political things too. Who's the pastors involved in that? Well, these pastors are there, but my pastor isn't there. Pastors are there focused on what? Pastors are tired. A lot of pastors are saying, I can't get my people to move, so they look for excitement outside. I'm thinking of one that's having Bible studies with political leaders, Bible studies with other pastors, Bible studies with, okay, fine, but what are you doing for the people inside, right? It's all these constraints, a church's governance, membership, discipline practices, and the ordinary means of grace generally. A church's governance, membership, discipline practices and the ordinary means of grace. Where have you felt any of those? Here or in your relatives' churches or whatever? That in turn create genuine movements, not man-manufactured fake-o ones. Like the political scientists discovered, movements and churches implicate and shape one another, strengthening each other. Let it go. Where is it? You do it. There we go. What constraints are necessary? The very things that make a church in the Bible. Now, in youth group, we've been coming up with our definition of a church, all right? But this one's slightly different. A church is a group of born-again, baptized Christians who gather weekly on the Lord's Day in a regular, predictable location to preach the Bible and mutually affirm one another's profession and discipleship in the supper while baptizing still others under the leadership of elders. Each of these constraints is biblical and necessary for preserving the dynamism of a movement, whether the movement is massive or tiny. Remove any one, and corruptions or nominalism, name only, will follow. A weak understanding of conversion being born again will allow a church to fill up with people who might offer sincere but false professions. Sincere. We're not saying everybody's faking it. We're saying they really mean it, but there's nothing pruning it. There's nothing analyzing it. A group that doesn't regularly gather cannot spur one another on to love and good deeds as the day approaches. Hebrews. A group that doesn't gather in one place is hard for outsiders to find. No, you don't have to have a Sunday night service, but you need to think why in one generation we went from saying one day in seven was different, and now we go, nope, it's all figurative. What's your reason for calling it figurative? So you can go to the beach or mow your lawn? You realize society used to be quieter on a Sunday? Not just Christians. Society used to. Now Sunday is yesterday's Saturday. Okay? So the point, where am I going with that? Do you realize when you're on vacation, forget whether you think you need to go to church or not. I wish you would, because you're tied, not as legalism, but Jesus, remember it said he went to the synagogue as was his custom. All right? You should love being around the people of God. You want to see what they're doing and be encouraged by them. You want to encourage them. But fine. You know what? It's hard to find these churches when they only meet once. If you're lucky, you can find, because everything's going out the window. The time that they used to meet, even in the morning, it's out the window. So you say, I found this neat church. Oh, shoot. The service was 3 hours ago. Right? You can't even find them. They're in some home somewhere, somehow. If you're lucky, you can get yourself. You want to bring you and your family into somebody's living room in Arizona? Okay. But that gets right. He did it. But it's rough. It's rough. That's your aggressive pastor from yesterday's generation. He did it. Are you going to do that? And so with biblical strictures loosened or even forgotten, movements can begin to unravel. Apart from the support of a trellis, the grapevine bends back on its own weight, or grows in directions it shouldn't, or it just dies. From their earliest history, therefore, Baptists have taken great care in defining a church, because our churches should be the origin and locus of any disciple-making movements that occur. The 1644 London Baptist Confession defined a church as a company of visible saints called and separated from the world by the Word and the Spirit of God, the visible profession of the faith of the gospel, being baptized into the faith, and joined to the Lord and each other by mutual agreement in the practical enjoyment of the ordinances commanded by Christ, their head and king. For the saints to be visible, they must meet together and regularly in one place. For them to be a company of saints, there must be the mutual agreement over one another's professions as revealed in the ordinances, and baptism. A church is not just three new converts regularly meeting. And has the movement of Baptist churches grown since 1644 beyond measure? In short, what pastors, missionaries, and campus leaders need is a vision for a church-driven ministry, not movement-driven ministry. It requires paying careful attention to our ecclesiology, even if building a healthy church is slow, sometimes cumbersome work. This is how we build for the long run, not for the sprint. Then let the movements of God swell as God gives them. Quite simply, the Bible places the local church and its devices into our hands. Well, God keeps the starting of movements in his own hands. Take care, said Spurgeon to pastors, when you see the people stirred up, that ye exercise a holy caution, lest the church become lowered in its standard of piety by the omission of persons not truly saved. And we ought to be just as strict in the paroxysms of a revival as in the cooler times of a gradual increase. Just a couple minutes here. What'd you hear in the second part of this article? Brian, go. Yes.
So a couple of things can happen. You know, there are people that won't come in wild, the wild will die. But then also movements that it does remain, but they're so untethered from the real thing, it becomes sort of an odd distortion of what should be. And, you know, that goes on for, I don't know, a few decades now.
Right. It fights, a healthy church fights against, meaning it's not going to all go away. Read these letters in New Testament. It's not like, remember, he calls them brethren. There's very few that he says, you bunch of heretics. But after he calls them brethren, it's like, this can't go on. This is not healthy. There's something calling it out. It fights against abnormal distortions or anemic Christianity. Okay? You know, he talks about weak. Something that's die. I gave you milk, not solid food. You weren't ready. Indeed, you're still not ready. He's not hating them. He's saying, you can't stay here. You can't stay here. So on World Watch this week, we saw, what was that? That was some dog that made a trip from, where was it? Yeah, all the way over here to the United States. You see that? He somehow got stuck in a cargo thing, right? Yeah, poor puppy, right? He came out, he was alive, right? He was alive, but he looked pretty scrawny, right? But they fixed him all up, and he's amazing, and now he's a hero, right? Because he took a big, long boat ride, all right? You're a hero. You've made it through all the church wars, and you're still sitting here, and you're tolerating a preacher who's probably here manipulating you. Stop it. Stop it. You're looking to the God who gives growth, the God who is calling you to submit to his authority to build what he wants so it's not weak. Lord Jesus, would you help us as we think on these things? It's heavy. Just like with the youth group thing, I think, who's going to follow this article? Who's going to read this? Who's going to try to understand it? Would you help the little thoughts here or there to just prick or direct us to dig, to look just a little further? Not to try to sew it all up, understand it all, not to make hasty judgments, just to consider our ways. Thank you for each life in here. Family.